the headlines, Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the main reason behind Iranophobia is the Islamic Republic's support for the Palestinian people. Russia calls on the UN Security Council to ask for an independent inquiry into the Nord Stream gas pipeline explosion. And the death toll from a massive earthquake that has recently hit Turkey and Syria passes 45,000, with many more still unaccounted for. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisu Mishahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the enemy has resorted to Iranophobia because of the Islamic Republic, which has been supportive of the Palestinian nation. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says Iran is not fearful of speaking out about the truth. He says Iran will defend the Palestinian nation in any way that it can. The leader was addressing a group of top officials as well as a number of representatives of Islamic countries in Tehran. The meeting was held on the occasion of Eid of Mab'ath, which marks the day the Prophet Muhammad was chosen as God's last messenger. Ayatollah Khamenei also called for cooperation among Muslims, urging Islamic nations to stay united. An Islamic center in Italy has recently released a book on the life of the late Iranian commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. The book's title is God's Fighter. Our correspondent has more.
The Rome-based Islamic center Imam Mahdi has recently published a book on the late Iranian commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Titled A God's Fighter, the Italian-language book revolves around General Soleimani's endeavors to defend the oppressed people, a man, quote, driven by an unshakable faith in God. The book is a collection of messages, thoughts, and letters by General Soleimani, a project that has been supported by all the members of the Imam Mahdi Center.
Who did General Soleimani fight for? By publishing this book, we wanted to shed a light on a man who was always described as an anti-something. Yes, he was against Zionism, he fought against Daesh, but he did all that for God, and that's why we call him a God's fighter in our book. This project intends to fill a void in Italy, as for far too long, all accounts on General Soleimani have distorted his true image.
In 2020, 40 days after U.S. assassination of Major General Qasem Soleimani, hundreds of his posters were hung across many Italian cities. Initiatives to honor the slain Iranian military officer were held in Rome and Milan. Imam Mahdi Center's book on Soleimani also contains speeches by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani on General Soleimani's martyrdom. The publication also contains photos portraying Iran's former top military commander.
Finding good quality photos of Soleimani was a daunting task. There are only a few good shots of him around. He was not a poser, he was a humble man, and he didn't love to be in the spotlight. My favorite photos are the ones depicting General Soleimani with kids and also his mother.
General Qasem Soleimani, similar to my father, because he caused that I love Islam more and more. He is my hero because he always helped the weak country or a weak Islamic country. I'm proud of him.
The book closes with 20 short stories on the life of General Soleimani, his relationship with his family, and with the late Iraqi anti-terror commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Max Civili, Rome.
Several Latin American governments voice their strong opposition to Israeli plan to build more settlements in the occupied West Bank. In a joint statement, Argentina, Brazil, Chile, and Mexico said they are profoundly worried by Israel's decision, which they say would violate international law. Last week, Israel authorized 9 settlements outposts and pledged to construct new settler units in the occupied territory. Some Western countries also criticized the plan, saying any unilateral action would only exacerbate tensions between Israelis and Palestinians. The new Israeli cabinet under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has stepped up its far-right agenda. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. Russia wants the UN Security Council to ask for an independent inquiry into the Nord Stream gas pipeline explosions. Russia's representative to the UN has already submitted a draft resolution to the 15-member council. It asks the UN chief to establish an international investigation into the blasts and identify who was to blame. The U.S. and NATO had called the September incident an act of sabotage. Moscow has blamed the West, but neither side has provided evidence. But an American investigative journalist claimed last week that the U.S. Navy divers had destroyed the pipeline with explosives. He said that President Joe Biden personally issued orders, an allegation the White House has dismissed. In Turkey and Syria, grief is weighing heavily on people as the death toll from a massive earthquake that jolted the two countries on February 6 is now past 45,000. Turkey has confirmed around 40,000 deaths, while the number of fatalities in neighboring Syria stands at over 5,800. The 7.8 magnitude earthquake and its aftershocks have also injured and displaced thousands more. Operations are underway to retrieve bodies from the rubble, as well as finding those who might have survived the catastrophe. However, many international rescue crews have left the vast earthquake zone as the likelihood of pulling out people alive from the piles of wreckage is diminishing further and further. In a rare scene, three men were found alive in the Turkish province of Hatay on Friday after being trapped under the debris for 11 days. At least 53 people are killed in an ambush in central Syria, which media are blaming on Daesh terrorists. The Syrian health officials say 46 civilians are among the dead. The victims had gunshot wounds to their heads. Other details are sketchy, and there is no claim of responsibility just yet after the attack took place in a desert near Homs. But the Daesh terror group has in the past killed or kidnapped many people in the central and northeastern and eastern regions of Syria. The latest such incident was on Saturday when 16 people were reportedly killed by the terrorists. Remnants of Daesh are still active in parts of Syria after they were defeated in 2018. The UN estimates the group maintains up to 10,000 terrorists in the country and neighboring Iraq. Earlier, we talked to our correspondent in Damascus, Muhammad Ali, to get more details about this tragic incident.
According to Syrian state media, at least 53 people have been killed by Daesh terrorists in central Syria, particularly in close to Al-Sikhne town, which is southeast of Homs city. What we know is that according to the head of the Palmyra National Hospital, the 53 bodies arrived in that hospital, and he said, head of that hospital, that they were shot dead in the head. There were also five injuries that arrived to the same hospital. According to one of those injured as a result of this Daesh attack, Daesh terrorists also burned the vehicles and cars of the citizens who were actually over there in that part of Syria collecting desert truffles over there when the attack happened. It's important to point out that there are still sleeper cells of Daesh in Syria's desert, in Syria's central desert and the eastern parts of the country. And it's very important to say that perhaps all Syrians now, if you ask them on the streets, know that the reason why those terrorists still exist over there in Syria is because of the U.S. support to terrorist groups in that part of the country. We all know that the U.S. Occupation forces in eastern Syria, in a 10th, actually illegal base, continue to support terrorist groups, continue to arm them.
The U.S. and China are on a collision course with each other over a wide range of issues, including Taiwan and the South China Sea. Tensions are now growing over the recent shooting down of a Chinese balloon in the U.S. skies. In our news review program, we discussed this in length. Let's take a listen. Welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, the U.S. says military channels with China are closed after a recent balloon episode elevated the tensions between the two countries to new highs. The spokesman for the White House National Security Council says, however, that diplomatic lines of communication remain open. Earlier this month, the U.S. shot down what it called a Chinese spying balloon that intruded into its airspace. Beijing slammed the move as an overreaction, saying it was a weather monitoring balloon that was blown off course. On Friday, the U.S. said that it had collected sensors and other debris from the balloon and investigators were analyzing them. Even before the balloon incident, Beijing and Washington were at odds over a host of issues, including Taiwan, Hong Kong, and trade. Meanwhile, a senior U.S. military official reportedly visits Taiwan amid these tensions over the island. According to media reports, the U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense Michael Chase is now in Taiwan, but this is yet to be confirmed by Taiwan's Defense Ministry and the Pentagon. Chase is the most senior U.S. military official to visit the self-ruled island since 2019. Separately, a U.S. bipartisan delegation is heading there this weekend to bolster ties with Taiwan's semiconductor industry. In response, China has urged the U.S. to stop meddling in the dispute with Taiwan. Beijing considers the island part of its territory and has repeatedly warned the U.S. against ties with Taiwan. To discuss that further, we're joined by Dr. Digby James Wern, a geopolitical analyst, and also Professor Yoichiro Sato Ritsukemen from the Asian Pacific University. Thank you very much to both of you, gentlemen. Let's begin with Dr. Wern. Now, these tensions are escalating even more right now, considering that we are hearing news from Taiwan that a U.S. military official is visiting there, although it has not been confirmed yet. But why do you think the U.S. is trying to rub China the wrong way?
Well, the U.S. is trying to rub China the wrong way all the time. There's nothing new there. Just 2 days ago, it was agreed that a Chinese mainland group would head to Taiwan at the invitation of the mayor of Taipei. And so I don't think it's any coincidence that those two visits are going to happen at approximately the same time. And of course, you know, the U.S. is in the process of expanding its bases in the Pacific. You know, there's problems in Australia with nuclear ambiguity. You know, the Australians, you know, not stating whether or not US B-52s have nuclear weapons, you know, the nuclear submarines as well. I mean, so, you know, this is escalation right across the Pacific. And, of course, there's always the problems that are continuing in the Ukraine.
So, Professor Sato, in your opinion, how do you see these relations between China and U.S. developing?
Well, as you stated earlier, the relationship has been tense for the last couple of years already prior to the balloon incident. And the balloon shooting didn't make it any better. But having said that, it's not, you know, when rubbing the other country in the wrong way, that's a kind of mutual tit for tat. That's how the tensions escalate. And the balloon incident came in the wrong timing when, you know, the Secretary Blinken was preparing for a visit to Beijing. And that was supposed to be an opportunity for the two countries to diffuse the ongoing tension. And there was plenty of reason why China too was looking for such an opportunity. China has been under the economic isolation because of the first pandemic, and also because of the political tensions with the United States and its allies and friends. And then China's support for the Russian invasion of Ukraine made things even worse. So China wanted to take a break from all these the diplomatic difficulties and try to diffuse the tension with the U.S., but somebody had to fly a balloon. So that tells something about, you know, the way Chinese government is operating. It's probably very disorganized on that side.
Thank you very much, Professor Yoichiro Sato from the Ritsukamen Asian Pacific University, and also Dr. Degbe James Warren, geopolitical analyst. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the News Review. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Congratulations to everyone on the occasion of 27th of Rajab, the Feast of Mab'ath, which marks the formal appointment of Prophet Muhammad by God for guidance of mankind. The English Radio congratulate all Muslims on this auspicious occasion.
Aperture.
Muhammad Iqbal, also famously known as Allama Iqbal, was a famous poet, philosopher, lawyer, and politician. Muhammad Iqbal is called the spiritual father of Pakistan, as he is believed to be the inspiration behind the historical Pakistan movement, in which he was one of the few leaders who first conceived the idea of Pakistan as a different nation for the Muslims. Iqbal is Pakistan's national poet, and his birthday is a public holiday in Pakistan. Muhammad Iqbal, also known as Iqbal Lahori, is considered one of the most important figures in Urdu literature, with literary work in both the Urdu and Persian languages. Although Urdu poetry draws heavily on Persian idiom and imagery, Iqbal found Persian more suited to his thought and temperament, and a better means of communication to a wider audience in the Indian subcontinent as well as other countries of the Muslim world. At the end, more than half and nearly two-thirds of Iqbal's poetry was in Persian language. Stay with us as this week's program looks into this extraordinary man's life and legacy.
song that has the fragrance of the companion shall take a nation to the companion. Sometimes childhood memories appear before my eyes like a pale pall of imagination. Among those rippling images there sails the craft of my thought towards the shore of silence, to anchor in the harbor of its own. I dwell on my existence. I want to decipher the oriental thoughts and secrets, and to put an end to my bewilderment and self-alienation. I am a traveler, standing on the shore of thoughts. My aim, to pinpoint my lost identity. I am a traveler, walking on the road of human thoughts. My destination is the land of belief in oneself, in a bid to revive an identity which might no longer exist. It is an identity which, like a child's toy, is played with, but in a deadly way.
Some ignorant guys sent to the slaughterhouse of death every day thousands of innocent people because they are deeply buried in the marsh of their jejune ideas. In a way, there are two types of travels, a physical one, or going from one place to another, and a spiritual one, or transforming from one mood to another. Those embarking on the first type are many in number, and those embarking on the second type are much less. My travel is a mixture of both. Within the land and the sky, a travel in time to appreciate the ideas of an Eastern philosopher, namely Allama Muhammad Iqbal, the thinker, that if his thoughts were well understood, we would not witness the ignorant behaviors by Takfiri groups that are far from Islamic injunctions and humanity these days. Allama Iqbal wrote great mysteries in his books for his son, Javed Iqbal, and all others. As an old man, Javed knows it well whom his father was addressing. Javed talks to him like this.
Right now, I am 90 years old. You don't address people of my age. You address young people. You like them to believe what I say. I personally cannot fully understand you. I follow a path not wanted by you. Talk to me, who is 90 years old. You feel the elderly usually talk in a desperate way. You advise that one should not be desperate. The right man is hidden in you. Go on with your search. He will surely appear. You are saying the same thing. You have not visited me. I did my best. I searched for 90 years, but I did not find that right man. Where is he then? Tell me if you know.
I begin my journey right from here to the city of Sialkot, the birthplace of Iqbal. Perhaps in this travel, I would be able to show some special features of that righteous man. Today, Sialkot is a city in Punjab, Pakistan. The city, when Iqbal was born, was part of India.
Oh, you who are familiar with me, come with me to the childhood alleys. Tread on memory's pathway. Come with me to my intimate's alley. In my childhood home, on roofs quite stranger to all noises. May they be merrily remembered. The period of harmony with existence and excellence. The pleasant period of being with a companion, with all its liveliness. During all the year's generous moments, those alleys full of love, the splash of pure wafers.
ये वो घर है जहाँ अल्लामा इकबाल 9 नवंबर 1877 को सुबह 5
Here is the very room wherein Iqbal was born on the 9th of November 1877 at 5:14 a.m.
उन्होंने इस घर की इब्तिदा की 6 फरवरी 1861
The house here was built by his grandfather Sheikh Muhammad Rafiq. He was the first to occupy the house. On the 6th of February 1861, he bought 3 small rooms and a house near here until Iqbal was born. Later, Iqbal's elder brother came here. The house has undergone no change since then.
Iqbal's ancestors were high-ranking Brahmins of Kashmir. They converted to Islam 500 years before Iqbal was born. The family was called Siparu, meaning educated. His father was a cloth dealer. Nur Muhammad's shop was frequented by great thinkers of Islamic sects. His mother, Imam Bibi, was also a religious woman. Iqbal had one brother and 4 sisters, all of them his senior.
Rooms were built before anything else in 1861. Iqbal's family prepared the first room for the wives. There, in that room, you see a cradle and a chair.
Encouraged by his father, Muhammad Iqbal learned the Quran from his very childhood in Hisamuddin Mosque of Kashmiris. Basic lessons were learned at home, as Iqbal says this was the best period of his lifetime, because under his father's support, his thinking foundations became established. Sialkot's graveyard tells years later, when his father died, the story of Iqbal's attachment.
So many times I've asked myself, what is existence? From where does it take root? What a secret it is that has attracted thinkers' attention. I could not find answers to those questions. Then, many years later, when my thoughts expanded, I traveled back to my childhood to find answers to my questions. There it was my father who decided on the shape a thing should take. Years later, when unknown things became clear to me, I came to understand Mir Hassan's teachings. He talked to me about the Book of Life, but he did not mention the book's title. A condition set before me by him was this: to learn new sciences Europeans learn. It is only then that you come to know what the value of the Book of Life is. He was quite right. Years later, with all my heart, I came to fully know the Book of Life. The Book of Life the Holy Quran, whose wisdom is eternal and solid. It is an illustration for life secrets. Its power makes the unfaithful faithful. To mankind, it is the only message. The bearer of it will enjoy the mercy of both worlds. Bandits turn into leaders just through its memorization. They become pious just with the help of this very book. He whose heart's pulsation is a result of the book's warmth, his restless way finds comfort just as does a pearl. Should you want to live a Muslim life, only through the Quran is this possible.
Sialkot, a city in northeastern Punjab province, located at the foot of the snow-clad Kashmiri mountain. It was here, in this crowded city, where Allama Iqbal's first educational basis took root. Having received his first training by father and such a great teacher as Molina Mir Hassan, the young Muhammad entered Scotch Mission School to start his official education therein. The school's premises, against passage of centuries, keeps the same shape as it used to have.
He finished his high school here in 1891. Then in 1893, he completed his 10th grade, and it was here where he finally ended his high school education in 1895 and got his high school diploma.
Having finished his high school in Sialkot, Muhammad Iqbal found the city too small to give him an opportunity to fly higher up in the sky. Muhammad was 18 when he finished his pre-university courses with honors, receiving 2 academic gold medals. Admitted on a scholarship, he left Sialkot for Lahore as advised by his teacher Mir Hassan. Lahore was a city southwest of his birthplace, 125 kilometers away from it. Then Muhammad Iqbal went to Punjab University, one of Pakistan's oldest universities, established in 1882 by the British ruler of the Indian subcontinent in Lahore. There, the instruction language was English, though some lessons were taught in Urdu. Young Iqbal of Sialkot went there to continue his education. Very soon, he got so famous throughout the world due to his thoughts and his Persian Urdu poems. Known as Iqbal Lahori, he was destined to get his BA and MA here and composed his earliest poems.
Allama Iqbal bila shuba hamari islami duniya ka.
Undoubtedly, Iqbal is, for us in the world of Islam, a clear metaphor and a great name. Iqbal found an Islamic world, a special thought. At the present time, we are living in a place so blessed as it witnessed Iqbal, the learned, for 5 years. At a time when Iqbal arrived here from Sialkot to enroll for BA, the state university here had this one dormitory only. Iqbal lived here for 5 years. I mean, his presence here lasted about 5 years. He then enrolled for MA in philosophy. He completed his MA.
Iqbal, as it seems to me, went through 2 periods in his life, a wisdom period and a love period.
During the time Iqbal was still in the subcontinent, and when he had not yet left for the West, he was naturally well acquainted with Western philosophy. had deeply studied Hinduism and Islamic thoughts.
At that time, Iqbal was quite familiar with Indian mysticism, and the traces of that school of thought can be found in his poems.
He studied in depth our religion. And with such a deep knowledge, he left for the West.
There was no ending to the stories of my restlessness and abandoning similar places. I was 28 when, recommended by my teacher, Sir Thomas Arnold, I left for Europe to continue my studies. Having a master's degree in philosophy, I had taught at the Oriental College, but going to England and starting study at Cambridge University for a doctorate in philosophy changed everything. Studying at Cambridge secured me opportunities to know better and more about Western philosophers. At the same time, I enrolled at the Faculty of Law to be able to get permission to act as attorney. The rest had no meaning to me. For that very year, I traveled to Hamburg, Germany, to do more research and finish my doctoral dissertation. For a whole year, I worked so hard to get fully familiar with philosophical foundations and to get my doctoral thesis finished. At that time, I met much of well-known philosophy teachers, such as the famous professor of philosophy, Max Nygrad, and the famous Orientalist, Reinhold Elien Nicholson.
He continued his university studies in Heidelberg, Germany, and became familiar with the thoughts and ideas of such philosophers as Nietzsche, Fichte, Schopenhauer, and the like. There were similarities between his thoughts and the thoughts of those learned men.
Iqbal continues to say that he was changing and thinking those days.
Interestingly enough, Iqbal was influenced by Western philosophers. He adopted their thoughts and opinions. He received ideas from them, but mixed them with his own to create an independent thought system and called it own philosophy.
Having received his doctor of philosophy, Iqbal returned at the age of 31 to Lahore. Never did he hesitate to return home, contrary to some students of that time. He left England quickly. He was then licensed to practice attorneyship and became a member of Lahore Bar Association. 3 years later, he became a lecturer in philosophy at Lahore University. He resigned after a while to exclusively practice as an attorney. This way, he was able to freely publish his thoughts. He continuously thought about finding a way to awaken Muslims taken captive by colonialism.
All my life has been coincident with the Indian subcontinent's darkest days, British colonialism, and now World War I. India was dominated by colonialism since the 18th century. But as World War I began in August 1914, a new form of cruelty began to cover my land. Indians went to fight a war wherein they had played no role. They were killed and killed for people who themselves were the main factor in bringing ruin and destruction to the whole world. Description of troubles brought about by those calamities is actually impossible.
In 1910 and 1911, and after World War I, we see a number of liberation movements. Muslims rose against British and European colonizers. So Iqbal found himself on a well-defined route. He started composing revolutionary poems.
After World War I, in 1918, and the fall of the Ottoman Empire, something had to be done quickly to save people of the tyranny imposed on them. I knew that a worldwide caliphate was no longer practicable. There was no agreement between Islamic unity and blind religious prejudice or extreme nationalistic ideas as promulgated by colonial powers. Unwillingly, I engaged in political activities. I tried to raise public awareness to bring about self-reliance.
Allama ran for Punjab parliament election. As he said, he hated political activities and Muslims' needs forced him to enter the political arena. Consequently, he joined the Muslim League Party. He succeeded to become an MP for Punjab province for 3 years. During that time, he tried to solve Muslims' problems. Iqbal used to talk on such problems.
Allama Iqbal nurtured the wish for an independent Pakistan. He would say a new country, an Islamic country, would come into existence on the world map. The country's name, he would say, will be Pakistan. Iqbal did not give this name to a new country, but surely he had it as a Muslim country in mind.
During my lifetime, I liked those sleeping in the world of thought to wake up from their deep sleep. But sadly, the sleep is too deep. Therefore, I took refuge in the world of rhythmic words and meaningful poems to awaken the youths of this sorrowful nation in order to sail the craft of our thoughts to the shore of productivity. I was a young man when I found out that to weather horrible tempests and the enemy's lurking place, we had no way but recourse to the miracle of last time. The Holy Quran, the book with miraculous words, which can be used as the best means to awaken thought and exalt the belief in self. The book is most succoring, particularly to the youth. I, who despair of the sages of old, have a word to say touching the day to come. Render my speech easy unto the young. Make my avis for them attainable.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
This is
a better life.
For a better life.
Farmud Boris to Lord
تمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is For a Better Life from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol. And for my today's speak, I want to go over a new subject with the hope that it may change our vision about the problems of our life. I need to add that my talk is based on the Quran and Islamic narrations. The theme I want to talk about is a fact which is that the scale of happiness and hardship usually stay at the same level. Or in better terminology, if we imagine that there is a scale for weighing the amount of the weight of our happiness and sadness, the two bottoms of the scale stay in the same row. In a general view, humans are all on the same level in terms of difficulty and comfort. Let me explain this point through some examples. We imagine that there are parents who have several children. Their life is very beautiful, very cheerful because of many children they have. But on the other hand, there are parents who cannot have children due to some illnesses. For example, wife is barren, whatever of medicine they can take or try to visit specialist doctors, they cannot solve the problem and they have no children. At first glance, one may say that the parents who have many children or enough children are happier and more fortunate. But if we look deeper and study the scenario, our judgment will change. Let me explain it. The parent who have children, even though they are happy, but having children confronts them with many struggles in their life. Among these difficulties, we can name the problems. I mean, the wife, the mother faces during pregnancy and delivery. The problem of children that are getting sick. Sometimes the parents see that the children's illness worsens in the middle of the night and they have to send the child or children to the hospital. The children's food and clothing expenses, the expenses of kindergarten fees and the expenses of their education. Finally, I mean the expenses of their marriage or the concerns that parents have about choosing a good spouse for their children. Sometimes a child may die due to illness and inflicts a lot of emotional damage on the parents. I don't want to list the problems for having children, but I just want to point to the mentioned fact that next to being happy with having a child, there exist some of the mentioned problems as well. Now, let's think about the second parents who do not have children. They may be sad about this matter, but none of the mentioned problems exist for them. They have no children, but they have also no concern about, I mean, their expenses, their illness, where to send them for education. They do not wake up at the middle of night because of the cry of the children and so on and so forth. Their life is less cheerful from this aspect, but they are free from many problems. Let's have a short break and I will be back soon to explain this point more.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
We were talking about a fact in our worldly life. The fact is that the amount of joy and sorrow of humans is often on the same level. Those who enjoy a kind of blessing, that blessing is mixed with a number of hardship, and those who are deprived from a blessing, they also are freed from a number of difficulties. This point is mentioned in one of the Imam Ali's eloquent speeches, as the Imam describes the life on this world by saying, لَمْ يَكُنِمْ رُؤُنْ مِنْهَا فِي حَبْرَةٍ إِلَّا أَعْقَبَتْهُ بَعْدَهَا عَبْرَةٍ. No one has seen happiness in the world, except that the world makes him face tears and sighs after it. وَإِنْجَانِبٌ مِنْهَا إِعْزَوْزَبَ وَحْلَوْلَا. And if the life is sweet and pleasant on one side, أَمَرَّ مِنْهَا جَانِبٌ فَأَوْبَا. It will bring bitterness and create death on the other side. Then the Imam continues, وَلَا يَنَالُمْ رُؤُنْ مِنْ قَزَارَتَهَا رَغَبًا إِلَّا أَلْحَقَتْهُ مِنْ نَوَائِبِهَا تَعْبًا. No one gets what he wants from the blessing and pleasure of the world, unless sooner or later the world will make him suffer from its problems and hardships. There are many examples for, getting your mind closer to the point that the scale of hardship and happiness usually is the same. For instance, if we compare a married couple with someone who has not yet married. As marriage has its own benefit, remaining single and its own relaxation and rest. And as being single is resultant in some difficulties, getting married accompanies with its hardship. For example, the one who is single can decide for himself or herself, but a couple needs to come to the conclusion in many issues. A couple's expenses of life is higher, but a single one should be just worried about his own expenses. Another example. For instance, we can consider someone who has a lot of wealth and property, that if we compare it with another one who has less money, we see that having a lot of wealth makes the mind of the owner busier with how to protect his money, how to invest it. Even if there is a loss in a transaction or a loss in a stock exchange, the one who has a lot of money sustains more loss than the one who has less money. Indeed, having a lot of wealth for its turn makes the life easier in many cases. In another example, the one who is genius and has a powerful intellect, he has many worries about every details in his life. But the one whose intellect is not that much functional, next to not being genius, he has less concern about a number of things in his life. Let's come to the conclusion. Just as a couple who have children, when they face a severe problem about their children and their mind is totally involved with that problem, for example, when they miss one of their children, just as they think those who have no children are happier, on the other hand, those who have no children think those who are bestowed with many children are happier and their life is more cheerful. This is a normal fact about our life in this world. If we have this vision about our life, we would become more satisfied with our destiny, with our fate, and do not regret others who enjoy a blessing, since everyone has his own happiness and his own hardship. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand. and every word I share, he knows. Allah knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.